Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rurkraut.
And today we have a new episode in our favorite series, They Didn't Win for That. We'll be talking about Irene Dunne and her performance in The Awful Truth. She was nominated for her work in the 1937 film in Best Actress, but she lost to Louise Reiner for The Good Earth. So we'll be talking about the movie The Awful Truth, why she lost at the Oscars to Louise Reiner, and what happened this year, because we both love The Awful Truth. So I'm excited to talk about that first and foremost and her delightful comedic performance in it.
Yeah, this is, I think, to many, one of the most controversial wins in Best Actress, our favorite category. Like you said, I love The Awful Truth as well. This is a recent watch for me. As of a couple months ago, I've rewatched it, and it's a movie that has so much charm and joy and is hilarious. And we'll talk about how that did at the Oscars, but yeah, I think it's interesting with these two movies and just the lineup in general. We'll see how we both feel about all five performances, at least briefly, and why Louise won over Irene, if that is our number two.
I'm glad that you watched all the Best Actress nominees. It is a great year for Best Actress. Aside from the winner, we, of course, have Irene Dunne, who we'll be focusing on today, but we also have Greta Garbo for Camille, Janet Gaynor for A Star is Born, and Barbara Stanwyck for Stella Dallas. So I think part of the reason we're also talking about this year is because we talked about Barbara Stanwyck last year and her phenomenal performance in Stella Dallas. And we talked about Janet Gaynor and her performance when we did A Star is Born with our friends from the Drama Podcast. I have also done a deep dive on this year with Kevin Jacobson on And the Runner-Up Is, so go listen to that. I think if you want an even deeper dive into every single movie, we won't be doing that as much here today. But yeah, The Awful Truth, one of my all-time favorite movies. I think I talked about it on our Sight and Sound episode as one that I would have had, I think, in the running. It's definitely in my top 20, 25 favorite movies of all time. It is a comfort to me. I will just put it on if I need something to cheer me up, something that is just a really easy watch, but is so well made and has that delightful 30s screwball charm to it. And I love Cary Grant, and it is such a shame that he wasn't nominated for this too. I think we'll get into that, but to get started with The Awful Truth, description here, a married couple files an amicable divorce, but find letting go of each other harder than they originally thought. This was directed by Leo McCarey and stars Cary Grant, Irene Dunne, Ralph Bellamy, and more. This won one Oscar for Best Director for McCarey, which is crazy. This is one of my favorite Best Director wins, but it's even more odd that it only won that Oscar. And it had five other nominations for Best Picture, Actress for Irene Dunne, Supporting Actor for Bellamy, Screenplay, and Film Editing. So what do you love about The Awful Truth? And what made you, I think, finally check it out?
I honestly don't even remember why I watched this, but I have gone through different marathons of either the Columbia Collection on the Criterion Channel or just different screwball comedies, and this came up, and I was just immediately, I think, blown away, in love, and surprised by what I was watching. It was so witty and just so much funnier than I would have expected for any movie. I mean, honestly, some now, but especially for the 30s. So I think that's something that with the script and the acting, there was a bit of improv on set, and what McCarey likes to do with his actors is to go off script, and some of that made it into the movie. So I loved hearing about that and just seeing how they interact. This isn't the only Grant-Dunne pairing we have. Cary Grant, I think, should have been nominated. We can talk about that. But they do have another movie that he was nominated for in 1941, Penny's Serenade. So that is next on my list. I just love how they interact, their camaraderie, and this idea that They're married. They somewhat hate each other, and they're both either lying to each other or cheating on each other. And from there, they want a divorce. And then in that waiting period of actually becoming divorced, they play with each other and mess with each other's lives that no matter how many times you watch it, it's funny every single time. And you'll find new things. I love Mr. Smith as the dog and even the comedy that he exudes and puts into the movie. So there are so many different things to love. I may have watched this because you had talked about it before, but when did you first see this? How were you introduced to it? And what else do you love about the movie?
It's so difficult because I've seen this so many times now that I don't really remember the first time that I saw it. I didn't have one of those lightning bolt experiences where I remember exactly where I was when I saw it and it having this transformative effect on me. Instead, I think it was just one of those that I found on TCM growing up and really enjoyed right away. And it just worked its way into my rotation because I don't really remember not having this movie in my life in some way, shape, or form, because it is just one of those, like, when I think of Cary Grant, he has such an incredible catalog of films. When you think of classic Hollywood stars, I really think he is the star I always come back to when I think of what it means to be a Hollywood star or an actor at that time. I do think he's my favorite. I mean, I love Jimmy Stewart as well, but Cary Grant has that, like, when you think of a classic Hollywood star, you think of Cary Grant. And Irene Dunne has a really interesting career. And I feel like a lot of people don't know her, certainly as well as Cary Grant or her work. I think that the thing about The Awful Truth is that for me, this is hands down her best movie. I pity people who try to watch Cimarron. I mean, good luck with that if you would like to try that Best Picture winner. I do like Theodora Goes Wild. I think that's a really fun one. She was nominated for that in 1936 as well. I also enjoy Love Affair. That is another Leo McCarey film. But this one really, I think, stands above the rest. And what I love about her performance in it in particular is that she didn't want to do comedy in her career. She liked melodrama. And I think at the time, especially, they didn't take comedy seriously. Everyone wanted to be in dramas. It was that pipeline, I think, from the stage to the screen, and the idea that the stage was more prestigious than being in a film. But in the New York Times in 1937, critics called out that this was a comedy vehicle for Irene Dunne. They started to see her as a great comedic actress from this movie. And I think what's really smart about this movie and why I always come back to it as a classic romantic comedy or screwball comedy is that the premise really works, right? You know, they have a ticking clock on their marriage where they have to decide if they want this divorce to actually be finalized. Do they want to be divorced? Do they want to get back together? And when you put that kind of pressure on characters, it makes them act in really ridiculous ways. And it also is a really handy device in the screenplay to keep you engaged and to keep it contained. And what I like about these characters is that they both make mistakes. They both act in really stupid ways at times. They both have the upper hand at different times, and they feel very evenly matched. I love the times when she is ahead of him and you think she's a little bit smarter than him. She would just never tell him that. I feel like that's part of her power as an actress too, just those little line deliveries that she'll have, or she'll just give him a look. Like, I'm thinking of the scene in the beginning when he has that fruit basket for her after he's lied about going to Florida, mm-hmm. and that orange says California on it. And you see her face when she looks at the orange, and then the camera stays on Cary Grant's character, Jerry's face, when he looks at the orange and realizes, oh, you got me. And then mm-hmm. she makes the comment about how it rained when he was there. And she just kind of teases him with it. She doesn't totally call him out on it. And I feel like that's what makes this so light and so fun as a romantic comedy. It's one of my favorites of all time. Whenever people ask me about that genre in particular, this is always one that I recommend.
It's so refreshing. I think this is going to become my number one recommendation too for like an old Hollywood rom-com for sure. In those first few minutes, I think you're dazzled by Lucy. I love her costumes throughout the movie, but this is one that literally is shimmering, and she has that really shiny dress covered with this beautiful, huge fur coat, and she just looks stunning. And she comes in and she's like, I've been with Armand and we had to stay in this hotel overnight and nothing happened. And of course, you can see Armand trying to flirt a little suspiciously with her as he's in this room. And in the room are some of their other friends also. And then the aunt comes in. But what I loved so much about this is that they're really fighting on eggshells and trying to be careful in this room. The friends at one time are like, oh, I'm not bored. I am enjoying this juicy gossip that you are giving me. And they're just watching everything happen. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so good. And the aunt makes a remark at the end because everyone's leaving. She says something like, oh, four's a crowd. I'm good. I'm gonna go. And there are just little inferences along the way that make you understand that life wasn't so different back then. And I think that's something that is a little unexpected about, you know, what you think of old Hollywood is that maybe things were really different or uptight or untouchable. And here it's just not the case. These people feel like real people you could be friends with. Another thing I really loved is that on my first viewing, it just seemed like the whole movie was an entire play about Cary Grant being gay, and it was just under the carpet the whole time that everyone was making little jokes, him included, and it was just a different reading that obviously not the reason it was made, but it was really funny to me in some of the things that they were saying, and that like they were getting divorced and they can't be together and maybe here's this other real life reason why. So very much not the point, but it still got some laughs out of me seeing it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is, I think, it's funny, like Cary Grant, he's in so many of these romances at the time, and knowing, I think, what we know now about him in that way, it's hard to really seriously see him, I think, with any of these women. But it's, I don't know, I do like viewing Jerry and Lucy as separated. I think that's where the fun comes in, is that they're both, I think, like getting mixed up with other people and also figuring out what they mean to each other. And there's so much, I think, just really incredible physical comedy in it too, from both Irene Dunne and Cary Grant. I think about the scene when she's performing and he is in the back being disruptive, falling out of that chair, or my favorite scene in the whole movie, which is the part when their dog is playing with the hat. That is just the greatest, when Lucy's trying to hide the hat from Jerry. Also, we should mention Skippy, aka Asta. He was in Bringing Up Baby. He was in The Thin Man. Just an incredible dog, a little wire fox terrier. He is so cute, and I love that scene so much.
That is also one of my favorite scenes. I mean, playing hide and seek with a dog, but that dog is so well trained, and even his timing is impeccable. His hind legs are on the chair and she's like, no peeking. And he looks over and looks back and she's counting. And even his face in those moments is very cute and so funny. But even how he looks up and sees the hat where she's hiding it behind the mirror, and then the entire debacle with the hat. That scene ends with one of my favorite lines in the movie, of Aunt Patsy going, when the men run out of the bedroom after they fought, she goes, they didn't touch second.
I love that line. It's so funny. It is just so deadpan, perfect timing.
Her dry humor is my favorite. There's another scene that happens in the bedroom that's one of my other favorite Irene Dunne moments, is when Jerry comes over. But then Daniel also arrives. So this is the man that's courting her for the time being, keeping her attention, really. and Daniel knocks on the door. So now we have Lucy opening the door. Jerry is behind the door and Daniel doesn't see him. And Jerry can hear the conversation that's happening. So Daniel really wants to kiss Lucy and she won't let him. But he's behind the door and also Armand's on the phone. So he has the power here. Like you said, this is the flipped moment because it's also this like love rectangle going on. And so he like hits Lucy in the funny bone and she starts giggling like this little schoolgirl to Daniel, who has now written and is reciting a poem for her. And Jerry's just living in this moment, so happy that he gets to make fun of her for this. And he keeps poking her and she keeps giggling. And now Daniel thinks that it's because she really likes him. It's just all of these different threads happening in the same moment and coming together perfectly to hit every possible comedic touchstone. So this is one of my other favorite moments. I think she handles it really well with feeling super overwhelmed. She's trying to, in a sense, be angry, but also ignore Jerry. So I think it's funny to watch her balance all of these emotions at the same time, which, again, I think she does really well.
I do, too. I also love that scene. And I one of my favorite moments from her in interacting with Dan when he's talking about Oklahoma and, you know, this life that they can have. Her face in the moment when he says no more New York shops is so good because it's the exact same face I think I would make if someone told me I had to leave the city.
When Jerry says, oh, you can go to Tulsa for the weekend, and her face just, you can tell, it's in black and white, but you can tell that her face just goes starkly white. But you feel that. It's, oh my God, it's so good. All of that Home on the Range stuff and them singing, I absolutely love that.
It's so good too, like how we were talking about the power shifting. I also love when they're on that date at the club and Dixie Belle Lee is there. Oh, and it's just so funny because I think anyone can relate to this when an ex or like someone that you used to date is with someone new and you just think, oh, I don't have to feel badly about myself. I don't have to feel badly about this. I am not threatened by this person at all. And that is exactly what is all over Lucy's face here. It just shows you like this is, she's not jealous. This is embarrassing for him, not for her. And she's desperately trying not to laugh when she's performing. And one of my favorite lines that she says here, the delivery is spot on. She says, I guess it was easier for her to change her name than for her whole family to change theirs.
With this like pre-Marilyn Monroe wind rustling the dress up. And they're all just looking at each other so awkwardly at that table. As she's performing, and she just thinks it's the bee's knees. She's so excited to be performing this in the club. And then, of course, I think we get Irene's best moment in the entire film is when this song comes up later, when she arrives as Jerry's sister. And this is later in the movie when he's now with another woman, Barbara, and her very wealthy family. So they just see her waltzing in. And she performs this song in this dress that just feels so out of place in this really elegant apartment. She's also, on top of that, drunk. I don't really believe in Irene Dunne's drunk acting here, but it does play into the comedy. And she dances the song for the family, and they just think they're the most cuckoo brother and sister. But that just adds to the tension in the scene and how you feel, again, about these two people related to this other family that feels very distant and almost in a different world from them.
Well, it's such a good lead up to that moment, too, because Jerry has been out in Bar Harbor with Barbara, this new woman. So Lucy has a new man. Jerry has a new woman. They're both, I think, experiencing each other's reactions to that. One of my favorite moments there is when he's on the phone with Barbara and she says, Jerry, you're slipping. And it's really good. It's like they know each other so well and she knows him and that he's mishandling this situation. And then when she's Lola, I think it's convincing, but I also think it's 1930s acting. Mm-hmm. Like that style and the time is a bit more heightened and over the top. And I just think it's so funny that she's completely different than who she is as Lucy. She's leaning into this other persona. She's leaning on him on the couch between him and Barbara. Like it's a very physical, hilarious performance. And I love how her singing is incorporated because she was a trained opera singer and she sang in all of her movies. But here she has a couple of different singing scenes and they're all used, I think, to differing degrees, right, of comedic effect. And this one, I think, is the funniest one. Her other really funny moment that I think is her best scene, like if I had to pick an Oscar scene for her, it's when she's sitting at the table and there's toast in that toaster and she is going on rapid fire. I'll bring back your favorite reference, Lorelai Gilmore style. Oh, yes.
I was going to mention it.
She is fast talking here and she is just, you know, going on and on. And she says, I'm serious about Dan Leeson. I like him very much. I'm all through with Jerry. He means nothing. I don't love him and I probably never did. I'm sure I never loved him. Now I hate him. That surprises you, doesn't it? I hate Jerry Warner and I like Dan Leeson very much. I hope he's crazy about me because he's the finest man I've met. I know my toast is burning. And it's the not even her turning to see the toaster. It stays like in her eye line, but it's off to the side and she just slips right into it. It is perfect. Like comedic gold, great acting from her. It would definitely be my scene if I had to pick one.
The inner cutting is just so well done. This movie getting the editing nomination is very deserved because it cuts between Jerry and Lucy is talking to her aunt. And after they've gone back a few times in this trope of your toast is burning, my toast is burning, and her just gushing over these men in her lives and Aunt Patsy just rolling her eyes, it's so subtle, but it gets the point across so perfectly. And it teaches you about these characters without having to explain or go into backstory or really belabor anything. It's all in the writing, their delivery, and how they get this across to one another.
How did you feel about the ending with the clock?
I finally realized at the end what was happening there. I love it. I think it's so cute. The whole going up to the cabin thing that they've been talking about the entire movie and the wind knocking at the door, making this noise, and you just see him like sneaking underneath and the cat is there. It's, again, every element that plays into it is placed perfectly. In the very end, you're excited to see them get back together and it feels right. And I love the clock and you see them both. It's kind of shocking in a visual effect kind of way how they make that look. But then they go into the same hole and the end. So it's, they don't have to show anything explicitly, but you understand where they end and somewhat happily ever after.
Yeah, I think it is really cute how it ends. And it actually, I read via TCM that a crew member came up with that idea of having him go in the door of the clock that her character goes into and how that, you know, is a perfect little code workaround.
Right.
But I love them both in that scene, too. It's, again, just a comedy of errors and really a perfect way to end it.
Gosh, we'll talk about the code with the good earth, but
just a preview.
To end our initial chat of The Awful Truth, if you could give this movie one Oscar, would it be for Irene Dunne for Best Actress?
It actually would be. She is the performance that sticks with me the most. And I feel like so much of the film's success as a comedy hinges on her and her performance. I know you could say the same thing about Cary Grant, but I really, really love this performance and this nomination. And she is one of my favorite Best Actress nominees ever. I love her. And I think this is her really at the peak of her powers, stretching and doing something different and showing that she can really go outside of those melodramas and be a comedic force. What about you? Would she be your Oscar winner?
She wouldn't be, but this movie deserves to have multiple winners. I like its win for director. I will come back and change this once we talk about the category for the year. My Oscar would go to screenplay because of that script that is so sharp and so witty, but I feel like that's not doing it justice because part of that is in how the actors portray that script and get that across and use it. And it's all in the cadence. And that really is due to Cary Grant and Irene Dunne. So I would like to say yes and no at the same time.
It's hard to when scripts are so improvisational. Like some of that, right, like came from their instincts as performers, which is really cool. It's good that that style paid off for them here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's briefly talk about The Good Earth in conversation with Best Actress, and it's 5 nominees. But The Good Earth, it won 2 Oscars, Actress for Louise Reiner and Cinematography. It was nominated for 3 others, including Picture, Director for Sidney Franklin, and Film Editing. It's interesting because Louise Reiner won the year before for The Great Ziegfeld, which is also a Best Picture winner. And then she wins again and becomes the first actor to do so. And now she's one of 5 that have won in back-to-back years. But this is now looked upon as a really rough win, partly because of the code, but it's because, you know, we have a white woman here winning for playing a Chinese role. And Paul Mooney, who plays the husband, you know, as they were looking for an actress to play this role, Anna May Wong was considered, but once they cast him, they couldn't, because they couldn't have mixed racial couples portrayed on screen, which is insane to me. But in that, they cast Louise Reiner, who I think is fine. You know, if we're looking at this as a performance and not the movie, I think it's fine. But they're
really okay. We'll talk about that.
That's me being generous because
okay,
I think she's almost in a supporting role. I think that's the problem. A lot of it is just shots of her looking emaciated because of her makeup. She doesn't have huge scenes. It's hard for her to be a lead character in this story, even though I love the book. I read that a couple years ago, and I don't think this movie does it any justice in terms of an adaptation. It's also very boring. It took me 3 days to get through this.
Yep, that's real.
I just don't understand the people that actually do like it. But yeah, you talked about this with Kevin on And the Runner-Up Is. So you've done a full deep dive on this movie and this performance. Tell me a little bit more about why you have trouble with it, or I guess about the Louise Reiner performance and why you were shocked about me saying it was fine.
Yeah, so this is my least favorite Best Actress win of all time, straight up. Like, she is the last place entry that we have. I would say another one would be, you know, Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side. Little preview for your episode of And the Runner-Up Is. But I think for me, and what I said on Kevin's episode that I still believe to be true, is that especially in the 30s, when these sorts of, I think, very racist decisions were made, you cannot put all of the blame on Louise Reiner for this. Paul Mooney is a part of it. Sidney Franklin, our director, is a part of it. You also have Louis B. Mayer at MGM. There are a lot of moving parts. A lot of decisions are made that made this happen. And it's really unfortunate that it did. I wish that this movie was not made in the way that it was. It should not have gotten made in 1937. If you think of this as a prestige picture, which is what MGM wanted it to be, I'm sorry, but this is just not good enough. It doesn't cut it. And Louise Reiner's performance, I think, is actually a huge part of my problem with the movie. I've also described this performance as a hangover on screen. I think that, like, the worst hangover I've ever had, how you physically can't move. You just look exhausted. You feel like a zombie. You need water and medicine and food. That is what I want to give to Louise Reiner as I'm watching her as Olan, staring blankly ahead, saying nothing.
Yeah. I was going to say, is that for Olan or is that for the viewer watching the
movie? It's for both. But especially, I think, for Olan. So, you know, it's hard because I think you have to, when you watch this movie, you also have to put yourself in the time and say there are certain things that are going to look bad because that's how they made decisions back then. You can't put it in a modern context, but you can also recognize those as incredibly unfortunate and wrong. The fact that Anna May Wong would have been a perfect choice for Olan, and the only reason that she wasn't cast was because of miscegenation rules within the code. And they decided instead that they needed Paul Mooney, who I actually think is less effective even than Louise Reiner in this film. I find him and his performance to be exhausting. And also, there's just nothing there. I have not read the book, so I think it's really interesting that you've read the book and you feel like this isn't a source material issue. This is an adaptation problem that we have. Like, this doesn't live up to the book. And I think with Louise Reiner's performance, what I agree with you is that she just doesn't have anything to do, right? It's somewhere between bewilderment and at death's door. That's the range of the performance.
Yeah.
And it's hard, too, because it's also, I think, perpetuating a lot of negative stereotypes of Asian women. So it's just, it's all over, all around, like a very tough, tough film to watch and a performance, I think, to root for as a win. I think what's interesting, though, and we can talk about, you know, why she won, is that in the New York Times at the time, so Frank Nugent, he said, Louise Reiner is tragically real as Olan, bringing to life the pathetic slave girl who was so modest yet so indomitable, so generous and selfless and loyal. So if you think about these sorts of ideas of actresses who overcome things in their films or actresses who don't have any vanity, that goes a long, long way with voters. And it did here for Louise, for sure.
It is a full transformation role. The book is bleak. It really does capture that. But I think there's more life in the written word. And yes, it's like these waves of famine and the locusts and then the Chinese Revolution and they go south. So it's just constant struggle. But I feel like this movie is just so bored with it all. And the performances, I wish she had more than like 5 to 10 lines and not just her looking sad and weak all the time.
Yeah. I think so much of why I'm sad that she won, yes, so much of that is because it's a racist film. But the other problem is that you also have these other women in the category giving incredible lead performances. Changed the trajectory of their career or have stood the test of time in different ways. Like you think of what Barbara Stanwyck pulls off in Stella Dallas and how that changes the course of her career. We just talked about Irene Dunne. The other part of it, too, is that Camille was huge for Greta Garbo. People thought Greta Garbo was going to win. She had never won. She was a huge star at the time, obviously. She was the glamour girl. But Louis B. Mayer was mad at her and wanted Louise Reiner to replace her. The Oscars have always been petty, but they were really bad back then.
Also in our list, we have Janet Gaynor, who won the first Oscar ever. Barbara Stanwyck, this is her first nomination. Greta Garbo, this is her third. She never won either, along with Barbara. And then Louise, who wins back-to-back years. And I feel like we just have so many other choices. I wasn't a huge fan of Camille, but Greta Garbo isn't bad.
She's great. The movie has issues.
Yeah.
And I know you don't like George Cukor, but I think she's great in it. Her aura in that movie is everything. She's very ahead of her time.
She's also an incredible actress. So her worst is still better than someone's best, and I'm not saying this is her worst, but I think, yeah, the movie I had issues with, there was nothing there that made me say, oh my god, she needs to win Best Actress for this role. And I think we
Ninotchka
have that
is better
with other, yeah,
yeah,
and that's her final nomination, which she should have won, I just would have rearranged so many things to allow these women to have won, which is part of the conversation that I want to have. Because I think if we have Irene Dunne winning this year, then that gets her an Oscar. Louise already has one. And even though I would have given it to Barbara Stanwyck this year or voted for her, I would have given it to her later for Double Indemnity instead of Ingrid Bergman for Gaslight.
Yeah, I think that works. I like Ingrid Bergman's win for Gaslight too, even though I would have given it to Barbara Stanwyck. I think if we really want to switch things around, we can go Barbara Stanwyck for Ball of Fire in 1941, because I do not like Joan Fontaine's win for Suspicion. So we could get rid of that. For the record, I think Barbara Stanwyck should have three Oscars. One for Stella Dallas, one for Ball of Fire, and one for Double Indemnity. You could give Greta Garbo 1939 for Ninotchka, because Vivian Leigh wins again in the 50s for Streetcar Named Desire. So that could work there. And then you could give Irene Dunne 1937.
Lots of options.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fair to say that we would not be awarding Louise Reiner. How would you have ranked these if we had ranked voting?
Okay. I would go number one, Barbara Stanwyck for Stella Dallas. Go listen to our episode on Barbara Stanwyck. We talk all about Stella Dallas and why her performance is so incredible in that movie. My number two would be Irene Dunne for The Awful Truth. And it's worth saying, I think that my number one and two are close. Depending on the day, I could go back and forth. I usually give the edge to Barbara Stanwyck, but sometimes when I watch The Awful Truth, I just think, you know, this is one of the all-time greats. She should win. My number three would be Greta Garbo for Camille. Then I would go Janet Gaynor for A Star is Born. I think all four of those are really good. And then we have The Depths of Despair, which is Louise Reiner in The Good Earth in number five.
I have a very similar ranking. I have Janet Gaynor and Greta Garbo switched, but I mean, yeah, it's really grasping at straws with Barbara Stanwyck in a clear one for me and Irene Dunne closely behind because of their performances, and they're very different. So it's also kind of hard in a sense to rank all of them because Barbara is doing extreme drama and Irene is doing comedy, but they're both very good at what they're doing on screen and make me really want to rewatch them.
And just thinking about Irene Dunne's career, she has five lead actress nominations. We have Cimarron, which we mentioned, Theodora Goes Wild, The Awful Truth, and then after The Awful Truth, she gets two more for Love Affair and I Remember Mama. It's just hard because she's always up against really steep competition, I think, or the film isn't that strong. This is probably the closest that she got was for The Awful Truth, but I think it is interesting that for Cimarron, she didn't win just because that was a Best Picture winning movie. But yeah, it's hard. She always had really tough competition. So I think if we're thinking about why Irene Dunne didn't win and why she lost to Louise Reiner, it comes down to a few really important things. But we talked about MGM and just how ruthless Louis B. Mayer could be and the attitude toward the Oscars at the time. But a tricky thing for Irene Dunne is that she was a free agent. She didn't work with anybody. She wasn't tied to a particular studio. And at that time in history, that's how you got votes. Louis B. Mayer would whip votes, and Frank Capra had recently expanded Academy membership and who could vote. So if you think about it, all of the stagehands and extras and people at MGM, they were voting and they were going to fall in line. And his plan was for Louise Reiner to win. It's just, it's a huge voting block that was going for The Good Earth from MGM.
Which makes one of its first title cards of this dedication to Irving G. Thalberg all the funnier because it's his last great achievement. And I'm like, this was your last thing? I'm sorry for this man.
Well, that was our episode on Irene Dunne and The Awful Truth. If you're looking to watch the movie, if you haven't seen it before, highly recommend it. It's streaming on the Criterion Channel. It's also on Amazon Prime. Rent it at the library. Go watch it. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we have our signature episode of the season. Always, we have our award season fantasy draft. And because it's season 5, we are doing All Stars Edition. So we will have two teams of past guests. I will be captain of one team. Nick will be captain of another. It will be very fun.
We're in the early stages of a RuPaul-esque show, but no, this is our biggest episode of the year. I am so excited, and we have even more people on it than we've ever had before, which is really exciting. I'm excited to see how this turns out. We've included categories we've used before. We're including new categories. We're going to keep it very fun, but also it's time for fall festivals. We're already starting award season and looking to some of the releases coming very soon that will be leading up to the Oscars next March. So I think this is a perfect way to do it. We'll have a blast. And yes, check out at least The Awful Truth. If you watch more of these films, let us know what you think in terms of your ranking and if you agree with what we said. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at OscarWildPod. We also have bonus content at patreon.com/OscarWild.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.